It is Valentine's Day, and there's no better day for me to return to your ear than Valentine's Day. I have never in my life felt more loved than at the outpouring of anger that the podcasts that were done previously did not load up on iTunes. So, yeah, sorry about that. We are trying to figure it out. Blog Talk Radio kind of makes it the show is already ruined because Mike is so mad that the show is not being organized properly, and God, he's just telling me all the things that are more organized in this podcast, and whew, that was funny. Yes, I apologize, but I do have to thank Michael, Thomas, Shayna, and Beth for doing the show the past 2 weeks in my absence. It has been crazy at work, and it's always crazy around the Olympics, but I almost couldn't do this week either. But I made time on Valentine's Day for you. So, like I said, I never felt more loved at the outpouring of I need my podcast, where is my podcast? We are attempting to work on getting the other two uploaded. I think I know how to do it for the future. It is a little bit difficult for the past, but yeah, I appreciate all of you. I really do. And thanks to Tom and Mike, because they happen to be here for, especially Tom, because he actually facilitated the happenings of the podcast, the inner workings that Mike has no dear
and
idea
thanks,
about.
Shayna.
Because he's a goddamn barbarian. Did Shayna do one as well?
She did both of them.
No, yeah. See, this is what I'm talking about with ruining the podcast. I was thanking Tom for setting up the SoundClouds that you guys could record. I had already thanked Shayna for being part of the podcast in the first place.
I found out today that whales don't mate for life, and that was kind of depressing.
Yes, one of Mike's. He said clown cars are better organized than this show, and then spontaneous orgies at SeaWorld are better organized, and that was the one that, that was the one that really got me good.
I thought, like, I think hot dog eating contests are better organized.
Those are relatively organized. You have to have the right number of hot dogs, the water. I mean,
you have to have paramedics.
Yeah, I mean, probably. Yeah, an ambulance for sure. Michael, Thomas, how are you two doing?
Doing pretty good. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yeah, happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy Valentine's Day, Tom, you sweetheart. Joe was very mean to Tom before the podcast just because he has to be so sweet around his daughter that he's just injecting venom into all the people that are not a part of his nuclear family. So, yeah, Joe's a terrible person. But hey, happy Valentine's Day.
So it's also sort of weird. I think today may end up being – well, all right. So the NHL trade deadline is in what, 12 days? It's February 26th.
Monday
the 26th. Not. So
yeah,
we'll have
less than 2 weeks.
We'll have one more podcast before that. But I have a funny feeling this team is going to look very different by the next time that we go on the air than it does right now. So, you know, what better day than Valentine's Day to kind of talk about some of these guys that we may be losing? I have a question before anything begins. And this podcast is going to be a little bit more about the future rather than the past because I don't care as much about the game that the Rangers are playing on the ice right now because it might not actually mean anything once all is said and done. Mike, starting with you.
Joe.
Thumbs up or thumbs down on the way the Rangers announced that they were selling?
Neither. I just kind of shrug.
You're an amazing co-host for the podcast. It's unbelievable.
Well, I do the suspenseful Caesar thing where you hold it sideways and you're like, oh, which way is it going to go? And then it's just kind of a meh hand gesture like, oh, okay. Because I don't know. It feels like this is something that we should have seen earlier. And it's also nothing has really happened yet except Brendan Smith got turned into a scapegoat. So, yeah, I don't know, Joe. Ask Tom.
Tom?
He did all the work.
So I would I would say that the way they did it, I think you give them some credit for having this sort of simultaneous release where they put it out on Twitter, they in full letter form, they did also the tweet thread, and then they also simultaneously they sent out an email blast to all their season ticket holders, whereas the online one was like, it was like Dear Fans or something to that effect. They, you know, just personalized it to the season ticket holders. Interestingly
enough.
Yeah,
but did they Snapchat it, Tom?
That's a good question. I didn't check at the time.
Did they Instagram it?
I don't think you'd be able to.
They probably did
see them doing
it.
But interestingly enough, the Canucks, they sort of did a variation of what the Rangers did by sort of having this open letter to the fans, sort of talking about the state of things in the future. It wasn't as detailed as the Rangers letter. It was sort of, I think it was sort of reinstilling confidence in the Canucks general manager, talking about what he's done, what they think he can do. But I wouldn't be surprised if other teams sort of copy this style. One of the things I had said on the last podcast was it was kind of interesting, not just the reception from Ranger fans, but other media members, other fans of different franchises sort of saying, wow, here are the Rangers are within, you know, a spitting distance of a playoff spot. And they're saying, you know, this is not our year. We recognize that changes have to be made. The one thing that I have heard, and I've a couple of my friends are season ticket holders, is they said it would have been nice if maybe this letter came out the day before season ticket holders were notified about renewals. Although one interesting thing that has since come out is that if the Rangers miss the playoffs, apparently there's not going to be an impact on season ticket pricing. I think that was something in the New York Post. We can link to it after the fact. But I think the Rangers probably should have done this a lot sooner. I don't think there was any point in delaying the inevitable. I think the fact that they had those losses in a row sort of forced the issue. And I think it was also announced that this was planned, and it wasn't impacted by the fact that they, you know, got kicked the crap out of by the Bruins on home ice. So I give it a one thumb up, not two thumbs up, because I feel like this should have come a lot sooner, but credit to them for actually recognizing what was going on and then talking to the fan base.
I'll shed some light, Thomas, on the season ticket thing, because I am a season ticket holder. From what I can understand, if you renewed within a period of time that I think started last week, your ticket prices will not be raised next year until a certain date. I think you get a portion of the season for free or for no raise for sure. And then the Rangers will make a decision on whether or not they're going to raise prices. And if they do raise prices, you have the option to opt out. So,
okay.
I believe, and you know, James Dolan has a, if we don't make the playoffs, we don't raise ticket prices policy that I was unaware existed until recently. And I think that with in and of itself sort of describes the level of success the Rangers have had the past decade or so. But to answer my own question, because Mike gave such a horrible answer, I loved what the Rangers did. I think going out and telling the world that this is the way that they were doing it and the apology to the fans. And it made me feel quite a bit better about the direction that the team was going in. And I mean that sincerely, because if they didn't release anything and these past three games happened, you could definitely see the nerves that would come with, oh boy, maybe they're not going to sell because they think that they're good enough. And I like the fact that they apologize, that you may see some familiar faces leave. that they're building for the future. It's a widely applauded move. I've never seen so much non-Ranger support for a move before. I think the Canucks did something today that was very similar.
I said Tom already said that. You just don't listen.
I hate you so much. Now you made me even forget my point. You
wasn't going anywhere anyway. It was terrible.
You heathen. See, it's Valentine's Day, Michael.
I haven't talked to you in 2 weeks. This is what happens.
You're coming at me with this nonsense. It's Valentine's Day. Anyway, I think it was a great move. I really do. And for a team, that's the point that I was going to make, which is actually the best
point
of the whole thing.
They should
have given
season ticket holders a free sticker or a free pin. Hang in there. A sticker
hang
that
in
says,
there.
Hang in there. And Bobby Granger
there.
Is holding the sticker. Just hang in there.
Remember Bobby Granger? Those are some pretty good commercials.
I do remember Bobby Granger.
I miss the Bobby Granger commercials. Anywho, yeah, for a team that keeps things so close to the vest, I thought it was a really good move by the Rangers. Anywho, in the letter, the Rangers discussed losing familiar faces, which you would think would be Nash. I don't think Grabner really counts as something like that. He doesn't really qualify. Ryan McDonough would, though, and potentially Matt Zuccarello. Mike, we're going to go back to you. We're going to give you a second chance to not ruin the podcast. Out of all of the familiar faces that the Rangers could trade, who are you most worried they will trade?
I think that what I'm most worried for is a Zuccarello trade with a bad return. Tom and Shane and I talked about this a little bit last time around, but I feel like that's the trade that I think would hurt the team and the fan base the most. It's, you know, I think it's really easy to get excited about what Nash and McDonough can bring in terms of a package, but Zuccarello is a player who he's just young enough to still be helpful, you know, within the next couple of years. And more so than anyone else in the locker room, I feel he's kind of the glue. You know, if Lundqvist is, you know, the heart of the team, Zuccarello is the soul. I've constantly changed my, you know, my metaphors there and assigning, you know, the vital organs to different players. But Michael Grabner is the appendix. I feel like that's the trade that's most troubling. I really worry about what would happen if a Zuccarello trade goes badly. What's interesting to me, Joe, is we've heard a lot of, you know, Tampa's interested in Nash and Nashville, Nash and McDonough. And, you know, we've heard teams connected, but we haven't heard too many teams directly connected to Zuccarello per se. And that is that's something I've been trying to keep a keen eye on, because I'm not entirely sure if we're going to see, you know, like the full blow up, everyone gets moved, or if we're going to see something more like, you know, it's McDonough and the pending UFAs, Zuccarello's still here, kind of a deal.
I would agree with that, actually. I think Zuccarello is the most interesting of the cases.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. He could bring back a lot, and he could help the team in a trade that way. You can get a lot for Zuccarello, but you have to find the right buyer who has the right assets. And we've seen lately, there's been a lot of talk about, oh, you know, Boston's really interested in McDonough, but it looks like what they could offer is really not all that appetizing. And that's a big part of this. It's, you know, it's, you need two teams to do a trade. And if a team doesn't have the right pieces coming, you know, coming back, it's really, you know, in many ways, the Rangers could end up being better off holding on to Zuccarello, because he is signed through next season. He shouldn't be too expensive to extend. And, you know, I talked about this last week, I think, with Tom and Shayna, Joe. I was actually curious about what your take is. I've heard a lot, specifically from Bob McKenzie, just describing, you know, Zuccarello having a wretched season, like just not at all up to his standard. And, you know, for sure he's not been maybe as brilliant as he has been in the past, but I don't feel like he's fallen off a cliff or anything. I just think he hasn't been as good.
And I don't even know if you can properly judge a player this year with this team, especially with all the injuries that the Rangers have had. Because when you look at really the team top to bottom in terms of the offense that they've produced, now, as of today, we know that Kevin Shattenkirk is playing on one leg. Brendan Smith is playing like an AHL defenseman. It is probably the worst season that we've seen of Ryan McDonagh. There's just so many variables that weren't necessarily there last year or in years past. I would agree with you, Mike, that I don't think Matt Zuccarello is having a wretched year. I think you're noticing Zuccarello's flaws a little bit more because of fact that the Rangers don't have as much offense coming in. But Zuccarello leads the Rangers. I mean, he's got 40 points in 56 games. That's nothing to sneeze at. He's probably going to finish the year with close to 60 points all in. I mean, Miller has 37 points and Buchnevich has 32 points. So you're not talking about a team that's blowing the doors off in terms of offense. So is Zuccarello having
a
terrible
year?
Like
no.
Zuccarello hit the puck more?
Yeah,
I mean, of course he could, but if you go up and down, and if we're going to go and attack a guy like Zuccarello, and obviously this isn't you, it's Bob, his quote-unquote rookie
Bob.
Year, I do too, and we're going to call that 2013-2014 because it was his first full year in the league, 59 points, 49 points, 61 points, 59 points, 40 points, and that 40 points is so far this year. So he's on pace to do what he's done his entire career. I think the perception around the Rangers is, oh, they're not as good as they used to be, so like everybody's bad, and that's not the case. You could certainly turn around and blame anyone, and Zuccarello is one of the leaders of this team on offense, so I understand blaming him, but I just don't necessarily agree with the fact that he's having an atrocious season. That was, Michael, your thoughts on this?
Tom's turn.
I meant to say Thomas, and I said Michael instead. You're in my head, Mike. I don't appreciate it.
I'm always in your head.
it's
where I belong.
So I agree on a couple fronts. I think that whatever happens with the Rangers, there's almost going to be three waves. Wave one is going to be players that have expiring contracts. So your Nashes, your Grabners, your Holdens, your DeHarnais, those types of players who you don't know what their status is going to be with the Rangers next year. So even if there's a chance you might want to have them around, you move them now, you take the assets, you reassess. Wave two will be something prior to the draft. Once the dust settles, other trades that have yet to happen with other teams, what players have decided to recommit with their teams and are not going to unrestricted free agency. We know the standings of the lottery and who's picking when. Then the Rangers have the opportunity then to say maybe a Ryan McDonagh, maybe a Matt Zuccarello. And then obviously wave three being during free agency and during the summer, once teams have missed out on certain players, maybe there's moves to be made because the Rangers have assets available that are comparable to players that could have been re-signed. I think one of the more interesting ones is Zuccarello, because I think that outside of Lundqvist, he's one of the Rangers' most marketable players. He's been their you-can-play representative, sort of being front-facing for the organization. He's someone that does things with charity. He was the person that was marketing the jersey for the Winter Classic in that advertisement, someone that is very popular with kids, is very popular with the fan base as a whole. So there's that element of if you're going to move someone like that, yes, it is a business. Everyone is movable. that I think they're going to be a little bit cognizant of that, because the last fan favorite they traded, being Derek Stepan, was also another marketable player. Stepan behind the mic, all his locker room interview stuff. So that was something to consider. I think that Zouk ultimately ends up being around with this team next year. One of the things that I think because of that is, regardless of what happens, you're still going to want to have veterans around the team. Nash has been, I would say, very open in the reality of the situation, where it could be a front where he's just, you know, playing his cards close to the chest, where, you know, I'm going to consider my options, not just where I'm going for the deadline, but maybe it's a team that I want to re-sign with long-term. I believe he used the phrase, and he later corrected himself, but like, if the Rangers don't want me, whereas he, by that he meant, you, they announced that they're going through this sort of rebirth and this sort of renew process, that maybe he doesn't fit in anymore, and he understands that it's a business. So in that element, you want to have an elder statesman like forward on the defense. If they move McDonough or they keep him, they would still have Shattenkirk, who is someone with experience, who's been through the process. But up on forward, you look down the roster after Nash, who really is it? I mean, you could say it's Kreider. He's still relatively young, but in terms of experience within the league, then it's
well,
Miller.
Jesper
but
Fast.
Then,
Jesper Fast has been an alternate captain. I mean, he's an actor. He's a grizzled veteran at this point.
They should make the 12th man a captain.
Fast met
with instant silence. I apologize. I ruined everything. I'm gonna sulk back.
You kind of railed the show, and then you push the train off a cliff into the Grand Canyon.
But
trains don't go on
cliffs,
Michael. I'm sorry, Tom is trying
to
make an actual point.
Let Tom talk. He's better than both of us. Just let him go. Go ahead, Tom.
But I think I agree with Joe's point that the next time that there's a podcast, that there's going to be a different roster, because I think the Rangers realize that their asking prices are what they are. We had the first move prior to the deadline last night with the primary pieces of Phaneuf going to Los Angeles and Gabrick going to Ottawa. So teams are going to sort of, I mean, I don't think it really sets the market or anything, but it's one less available player, more so Phaneuf than say Gabrick. And now the Kings, that they've addressed that, there's reports that they're looking for mid six secondary scoring. So I think that the Rangers will reach a point where they're going to be honest of what they themselves will accept for, say, Rick Nash, and they're going to try and make a deal sooner rather than later, because I think the last thing they want to have happen, and I cringed when I was watching, it wasn't against the Wild, but it was the game prior, where he's on the power play screening and a puck goes whizzing by his face and he sort of, you know, almost drops down to the deck. And I'm saying to myself, this is all the Rangers need. They announce that they're selling, they have the most valuable asset on the market, and then he takes, you know, a puck to the noggin and then he's out the rest of the season. So I think that they're going to look to at least make a move, because right now, I mean, they are playing a lot better since they announced this new plan, and so far they're still within striking distance of a playoff spot. But I think once you start making those moves, it sort of sends the message that this is what's actually happening, where Zuccarello said, yeah, we know that what management said, but we're still playing these games. So I would expect within the next week, even if it's something minor as say Nick Holden goes, or Desharnais, or maybe they spring and do Grabner first. But something will change, because now that they've announced their intentions, they would look very disingenuous if they go on a run and they hold on to everyone for the sake of making the playoffs.
Yeah, Mike Actually, I think it was you, me, and Mike, Tom, maybe a month ago when we were debating who the Rangers could trade and what, and I think I mentioned Nylander like 4,000 times. Zuccarello, to me, has always been the failsafe of this endeavor. We traded McDonough for X, we traded Grabner for Y, we got Z from Nash, now we need A, okay, let's trade Zuccarello. As much as you may love Zuccarello, and as much as I love Zuccarello, as much as we all love Zuccarello, because who couldn't love Matt Zuccarello? His contract situation isn't necessarily one that's advantageous to a rebuilding team. Zuccarello has, what, 1 year left or 2 years left, I think, on his contract?
1 year after this year.
1 year. He's, what, 31 right now? So he's going to be 32.
You need a captain, Joe.
You do need a excuse me. He's 30. So he's going to be 31 at the start of next year. God, he's only born a year before
September 1st.
I am old.
He also has the heart of a child, which means he's even younger than he might appear.
The heart of a
and he has
the
less
heart of
than
a child,
mileage.
But also a lion child.
Doesn't have much NHL mileage. Many 30-year-olds.
Which I would 100% agree with. He only has 439 NHL games under his belt. And the heart of a child. I just don't, like a fairy of some type.
Woodland creature.
I don't know if keeping Zuccarello makes sense if you get the type of offer that you'd want. I'm in agreement. We got into an enormous fight in the Blue Shirt Banter Twitter group a few weeks ago. And Adam made a great point. You need somebody to teach the kids how to play the game the right way. And if it's Ilya Kovalchuk, who potentially wants to come to the Rangers over the summer, great. Great. If it's the guy
that's not
below,
great.
I wouldn't mind Kovalchuk. Whatever.
I would mind Kovalchuk.
It's about,
you're breaking up. I can't hear a word you're saying.
You're breaking up, Joe.
Tom, you and I have to talk while he figures out his microphone thing because we record the show live like idiots.
But yeah, I was one of the people that was sort of pro Kovalchuk just for the fact that he's someone that has immense elite talent. He's played very well the last 2 years in the KHL. I believe he's still the leading scorer. And my contention is you're still going to need players to fill out a roster. And even if next year goes sideways, you look at it as a guy that could be very good on your team, and then he becomes an asset that you flip at the trade deadline. Because
He'll be 35.
He can still play. He can still shoot. He's a very good player.
He can
still skate. He's not – let's put it this way. Look at some of the players that the Rangers have iced out and are terrible skaters. And I would bet – that Kovalchuk would not be nearly as bad.
All right, you know what, Tom? I'm going to pose it to you like this. At the risk of sounding like a xenophobic North American hockey fan, has Kovalchuk throughout his career given you any impression that he's a veteran presence, part of a leadership group guy that you would consider like a positive influence in the locker room?
Yeah, he actually, the year that the Devils went to the Stanley Cup final, he was given a lot of compliments for him being this veteran presence within the locker room. And I believe it was actually revealed that after the cup run that he had been playing with an injured back, and he had made no mention of it to anyone because he just wanted to help the team any way that he could. And while granted, if you're playing hurt, sometimes it's stupid, but the way I look at it, and it's a situation that it's kind of complex.
God damn you, Tom.
And it really is, because people say, well, Kovalchuk signed this massive deal and then he flat left the Devils. So there's a couple of elements here. Number one, the deal that he signed was not a Lou Lamoriello contract. Lou Lamoriello does not sign long-term deals. He does not like those types of contracts. That was one that was pushed for by the owner. I don't remember his name, but the Devils have since changed ownership. So by him leaving when he did, he gave the Devils a ton of financial flexibility for the penalty. I think it was $250,000. So they really didn't gain anything in terms of a cap recapture perspective. So it wasn't a situation where, oh, he's screwing over the Devils. He actually helped a great deal.
I appreciate that. My problem is this: he would represent, no pun intended here, the devil you don't know. Whereas you have guys here, I think it's a really peculiar road to take to the free agent signing that becomes the new captain, the new leader in the locker room. Because I don't think, and I don't know, maybe this is just my affinity for Zuccarello kind of shining through, but to me, like, a move like Kovalchuk just seems like, why would he be there to be a role model? Okay, well, he's going to be 35 going on 36 next season. He's turning 35 this April. I forget exactly. Doesn't it have to be a trade-in sign with the Devils? There's even still, like, that wasn't a big factor to me. What the big factor is that I don't see the value in, all right, we want to be young, we want to rebuild, we want to give young players an opportunity to establish themselves in, scoring line roles. And I wonder, wouldn't the Rangers be better served, signing a UFA player out of college and giving him that opportunity in the lineup over Kovalchuk?
If Kovalchuk is free, what does it matter? I'm back, by the way. I don't know what happened. I totally lost connection. I was kicked out.
Yeah, you said you sound fine. You signed
yes, your the age factor is a good point for Kovalchuk. He is 34 going on 35, but in the past, he had 78 points in 60 KHL games last year. He has 63 points.
This just feels like a Sather era idea to me. That's all.
But so the
here's
my,
the other thing. Wasn't there
ahead,
the Tom. I forget. I think. Sorry to interrupt, but the Rangers were interested. I forget what his first name was, but wasn't his last name like Zarapov or someone that earlier this year they were interested in signing, and he was 36.
So
in this situation,
that's a much different animal. That's a depth scoring guy you're bringing in because you fucked up. You don't have enough centers, and Kovalchuk would be. We need a new. We traded away Nash. We might trade away Zuccarello. We traded away Stepan. We need another guy who can plug in. And best case scenario, let's say it's just a 1-year rental for Kovalchuk. Also, sidebar, I can't believe how long we're talking about Kovalchuk. Let's say it's just the 1-year rental, and you keep the idea open to trade him. Okay, but to me, there will almost certainly be a more attractive option in free agency.
In terms
even
of
to fit that role.
I don't
right.
know if it's
but it's JVR.
Well, the bottom line is none of us know until we get
it's
the free agency.
Evander Kane. There's not many options in terms of a top six elite level scoring. It's James Van Riemsdyk, it's Evander Kane. Those are really the two top names. And then from there, you're looking at potentially RFAs. And can you trade for someone that you then sign to a deal? So the team, it's not like you're not offer sheeting them because it's stupid that it doesn't actually happen more because I think it would help the free agency system as a whole. But that's a whole conversation for another day. But I think that this is a leveraging situation where it's apparently Kovalchuk wants to play in New York. It's either the Rangers or the Islanders. I really don't see him going to the Islanders and putting up with all the nonsense of they're practicing on Long Island, they're playing in Brooklyn, and all this. I look at it as 1-year deal, two at most, but I would go with one just because you can give him a contract that pays X and say, okay, if you hit this incentive, you know, it's $500,000 here. If you hit this incentive, it's $250,000 here. So you're making him work for it. And it's also, I know it was only
like Yager's deal. Yeah.
Right. I think it was only 18 or 19 games, but he was a teammate of Buchnevich's. And I think there's something to be said for having Buchnevich learn from
that.
A player like him. So I think that it will be determined by how well they do in round one of trades. So depending on what assets they get, because for all we know, they might get an NHL-ready prospect that they're penciling in a, say, top six wing spot. They may get a NHL-ready defenseman that then they say, okay, because we got player X back, we're now going to trade so-and-so to fill in a hole on the wing. But
yeah, that's where I'm coming from, is I feel like there will be younger guys here who deserve an opportunity. And I limited that to college free agent signings. But I think in general, I think that is something the Rangers should continue to do, because it's for the same reason, for the same argument of getting Kovalchuk. It's free. It just costs money. But more importantly, it takes up a contract spot. And, you know, that's why you have to say, all right, well, how many of these, how many of these lottery tickets are we going to, waste on a guy who cannot be an answer 3 or 4 years from now in Kovalchuk's case? You know what I mean? It's all right. Well, can we find, someone like Alex Kerfoot who looks really good in Colorado? You know, is there an opportunity to find that guy, to find a Will Butcher, to find, I think it's very much premature to put Neil Pionk on that list, but there are guys, Kevin Hayes, the list goes on and on. There are opportunities to kind of grab these players. And one of the things you use to woo them is, yeah, we have room for you in the lineup right now. And the Rangers are going to be able to say that to freaking everyone if everything goes as we anticipate on deadline day. And that is, to me, an incredibly valuable asset, especially we know Drury is great at this. And, we see the Wolfpack are turning it around. There's an opportunity for these guys, like, yeah, you have every chance to make this team. And if you don't make the team, you're going to be in Hartford. And, every guy is going to say, well, the guys in Hartford got plenty of chances up with the Rangers this year. So I think that is also worth a lot. And I don't know, I definitely, there's a lot of weight and credit. There's value, I should say, to the Buchnevich angle. I think that's a big deal. But to me, Kovalchuk just feels like, it's just this headache. It's something that's too complicated. We have no idea what he's going to look like in the NHL again. I probably underrate him in terms of the impact he can make. But, this year I just checked his stats. 53 games, 63 points in the KHL. Last year, 60 games, 78 points. The year before that, he had 49 points in 50 games. He's leading the KHL in points right now. But, I don't know. Then again, it's also important to keep in mind that Nigel Dawes, the former New York Ranger prospect, has 55 points in 45 games in the KHL. So, a little bit of context with that stuff.
But here's my point on the matter. And Tom brought up the Buchnevich point, which I was going to make. Screw you, Tom. And I think it's the most important, really, point to make. What are the Rangers next year? If they're nothing,
yeah, we don't know,
and we're assuming they're going to be nothing, right? They're going into this sell-off. What would matter? I mean, a guy like I would bet money that Kovalchuk is a 30-goal scorer in the NHL next year. I really would. And if you get that type of a guy, if Nash comes back on a cheap contract, if Tom is right, you sign Kovalchuk to a 1-year deal with incentives.
On the
right,
you're
not putting an unbelievable. You're not putting an unbelievable lineup together, but you are putting a guy who can teach you what to do on the power play. It's an instant connection for Buchnevich, who is going to be a big part of the Rangers' future. And you're not really taking a roster spot away from a kid. Hedl and Anderson, if both happen to make the team, are centers. They're not wingers. You can thrust Miller to the wing and keep him away from the center position. if you really have to. Boone Eves can play fourth line center. If you need to go find a hired gun to play third line center, whatever it may be, I would be far more concerned if Kovalchuk played center than I would be at the fact that he's a winger. So be it. I mean, if your top line, or if you get some combination of Kovalchuk with Hedl and Buchnevich or something really crazy, everybody benefits from that. Everybody does. A guy like Hedl, a guy like Buchnevich, who can learn from maybe one of the better snipers of our generation, there is no downside. If the Rangers were going to be playoff contenders next year, I think there would definitely be a little bit more risk associated with it. But even so, I would still think that Kovalchuk is worth the risk. I really do. But for me, it's not even about selling tickets, because the Rangers are going to sell tickets regardless. It's about having somebody there. Like, you don't want the team,
especially if they keep writing those nice letters.
You don't want the team to have no talent. You really like the team.
Yeah,
has
but
to
they won't
have
no talent though. Zibanejad will be here. Shattenkirk will be here. Buch will be here. Kreider will almost certainly be here. There's going to be stuff there.
But why would you say no to a 30 goal free player?
Because you might find a young guy who will be a more important and valuable asset in the next 3 years, which is going to be 10 times more important than what happens next year. Next year is going to be
Rangers,
a
wash. The Rangers would know that already, though. They would know that.
I don't
think
you find anyone short term. I think in terms of what you're looking to fill, yes, you might say you have someone, and I'll just say if they thought it was Evander Kane or if they thought it was James Van Riemsdyk, it's not going to be guys that you're going to get on deals that are less than 4 years. And I think the primary goal of what they're trying to do is, yes, they're going to look to find and assess young talent, but they're going to look to set up sort of building blocks. They're going to look and say, all right, we have Kreider, who is another interesting, just for the way his contract is set up, that they're going to have to potentially re-sign him within this window. But you'll have Buchnevich coming off his ELC. You'll have Anderson. You'll have Hedl. You'll have Pionk. You'll have Shea. You'll have a lot of different guys that they're young, and the way that their contract situation is set up. I think the one player that we've not mentioned in detail, which they're going to have to make a decision on, is Miller, because he's an RFA this summer, but he's one year away from unrestricted free agency. So any deal that they make with him, it's going to be long term, because a 1 year deal would take him right to UFA status. But I think I agree with Mike that they could potentially find better younger talent, but I don't think you're getting them on the term that the Rangers are looking for. I don't think they want to really go long term with anyone that's not currently on the team, because they don't know what they are. They don't know what they're going to be. They don't know what assets they get. For all we know, and this, I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but say Dallas is hot and heavy that they're going to go after Nash, and then at the last minute Nashville says, we got to the Cup final last year and lost. We are not going to let someone within our division get a valuable asset, so we're going to blow away the Rangers. And then the Rangers say, oh, wow, we got more than we thought, and this checks off box X, box Y, and box Z. Now we're only shopping for X amount of things. So it changes the progression of their rebuild. It's not going to be like a one-and-done thing, but I think that there's the potential, if done right, and goaltending withstanding, for the Rangers to sort of follow the mold that the Maple Leafs executed, where they sort of bottomed out, they draft well, they progress a little bit. Last year, obviously, they make the playoffs and they come up short against Washington, and we see where they are now, and then I think that next year they're going to be even better. So it's and again, there are things that they need to do. There are things that we can see, but until they start making the trade and we see the types of returns that we're getting, the types of player they're looking for, it's hard to sort of project outward. If a move had been made already, we could say, okay, this is the profile of player. then you could then connect the dots and say, well, this team was interested in player X and here's what they have.
I agree with you, Tom. I feel like a tone is going to have to be set soon. And, you know, just as Joe was saying, you know, by the time we do our next show, it feels like the team's going to be different, because I also somewhat get the feeling that the Rangers are very much interested in setting the market, and because they're in a very unique position compared to a lot of teams where they have so many guys they can move, you know what I mean? And it's almost in their best interest to say, like, you know, this is what this is going to cost. But I kind of got wrapped up in talking about Kovalchuk. I feel like we all did, but we don't know what's going to happen really until we see what, you know, when all the smoke and dust clears after the deadline, because I think then we'll get a much better idea of, you know, number one is how many contracts are going to be on the books come July 2nd, you know what I mean? Or July 1st, the morning of, cause it's, you know, we know who the UFAs are at the NHL level, but, you know, in terms of standard contracts in the AHL, there's really not that many, I think. And it's a really, I don't know, because of, it was a big transition year for the Wolfpack. They have a lot of guys there who, you know, are kind of on a couple year deals. And to me, what's going to be interesting is what happens in terms of that leadership role, in terms of the point that Adam made in our Twitter group, which is you do want that guy, you know, who's there, who can kind of show the ropes. And I don't think any of us are really certain who it is. I think we all agree we'd like it to be Zuccarello, but I do admit there does exist a scenario where Kovalchuk is not a bad option. My whole feeling is, like, you know, if you're blowing it up and you're giving young guys a chance, I don't see why you just don't open the door all the way to young guys. You know, it's, there is the dilemma of, you know, can young guys lead young guys? But there are, you know, a couple of guys who feel like they could be young leaders on the team. And, you know, there'll still be a couple of guys who are still around. It's going to be really hard to get away from Mark Stahl. You know, we haven't talked about that in a while, but it's, you know, there's still going to be a lot of things the Rangers have to deal with. And that means contracts that are on the books. Henrik Lundqvist isn't going anywhere. He's obviously, you know, the biggest leader on the team, regardless of whether or not he has a letter on his jersey. So, yeah, I don't know. Joe, say things.
I think we're going to get a good idea of what, like Mike said, of what the Rangers are going to do as we go forward. If I were Jeff Gordon, I would have told you a week ago I want to trade McDonough first, just to get a gauge on what I'm dealing with. But if the interest in Nash is as hot as it seems to be, if you can get a guy like Tolvanen out of Nashville or a prospect of that level, I think you need to make a swing for it. And it seems like a lot of people are sort of backing away from the market right now, but all you need is one general manager. I mean, Boston and Tampa seem to be fighting for one another over McDonough. Those are two
teams.
That's
good news, by the way. That's nothing but good news to the Rangers.
They're within points of each other in the standings. They're division rivals. That's how you start a bidding war. Is Minnesota going to be interested in McDonough? Literally, there are names flying around everywhere. And I want this to start because there's so much anticipation right now. You just want to make sure that the Rangers don't overplay their hand, and the next thing you know, they're selling off for whatever they can get. I don't think it's going to get to that point. I really do think we've reached just this moment of recognition where you're going to see these general managers start to make moves. And I think it's got the first move may be the most important one. I would have told you it's coming from McDonough. Now I think it's coming from Nash. I get the sense that there's so much more interest in Nash than maybe I even anticipated there to be, that we're going to get a really good idea of the direction the Rangers are moving in. But again, this is all a good thing. Nothing bad can come. The Rangers aren't going to regret, as much as McDonough is a great player, the Rangers aren't going to regret trading him when in 2 years or a year and a half, he's going to get an 8-year contract worth seven or $8 million that takes him until he's 37 years old. I mean, listen, I love Ryan McDonagh as much as all of you do. The fact that the Rangers are going to walk away from this without a Stanley Cup for him is almost as bad, but really not even close, to walking away from Henrik Lundqvist not having a cup. But you can't pay players tomorrow for something they did yesterday. And you'd rather trade a guy 2 years too early than 2 years too late. And the Rangers did that with Stepan, even if the execution was wrong. The thought process was right. But McDonagh, you're walking away from a contract that I think would end up crippling the team a few years down the road. And their team is going to make
it
that
looks
mistake.
A lot like, it feels a lot like a team that might be learning its lesson from the Girardi and Staal contracts to me. And understanding the context of where they are, how old Hank is, the direction the league is going in. And you have to be really careful about the contracts that you walk into, especially when you're still burdened by, you know, contracts that were very clearly mistakes that you're still dealing with. And, you know, this is all part of that. This is part of, you know, this is, we know that Glenn Sather is going to be around for a bit more, and his legacy and some of his mistakes are very much still with this team. And it's, you know, his fingerprints are all over this, you know, this, the blowing up of this current team and, you know, the kind of the end of the Lundqvist Cup window. And that's a real shame, but this is the bitter pill you have to swallow in the salary cap area. You have to, like you said, Joe, you can't get on the hook for McDonagh at like a 7.8 million cap hit for 8 years or 7 years or 6 years. You just can't do it.
Very quick question, because I have to end the show because I hear my child screaming and my wife is probably going to kill herself. Three sentences or less. Do you trust Jeff Gordon for the rebuild? Michael.
Because
that's a sentence,
Tom,
right there. That's
because
a sentence.
Because of a point that Tom brought up when we talked about something similar, I'm going to say I'm optimistic, and I'll let Tom fill in the rest. He pointed out something pretty brilliant about Gordon's time in Boston. Do you know what I'm talking about, Tom?
Yes. So Gordon, prior to joining the Rangers, he worked in their scouting department. And then he rose to the ranks of assistant GM. What he's most known for is he was at the helm for, I believe it was the, I think it was the Kessel-Marchand draft, in which he also traded Andrew Raycroft for Tuukka Rask.
For Tuukka, yeah.
Correct. And then he also played a role in the signing of Chara and Mark Savard. And then some people say that they were deals that were unofficially orchestrated by Peter Chiarelli, because Chiarelli took over shortly afterwards. But I would say that Gorton's background is in scouting. As soon as he was fired from Boston, the Rangers picked him up as a scout. Then he moves to AGM, but then GM. I think that a lot of people are doubting Gordon, primarily because of the return in the Stepan trade. So that's something that I understand, that there is concern. And some people also have wondered how much sway that does Sather still have. So what I'll say with Gordon is I think he deserves a trade deadline, given the way that the Rangers are operating. You can get on him all you want for the Eric Staal trade. That, even though if people say that was a Glenn Sather move, he was still the guy calling the shots. But I think that now that the Rangers' identity is known, that they're rebuilding, that this is somewhat an area that he's familiar with. When they were rebuilding on the fly, they were still looking to contend while rebuilding. So it was sort of being a toe in between both waters. So I would say that I'm giving Gordon this trade deadline, and I'm giving him the beginning of free agency, that sort of period. And after that, we'll have a good sense of what type of team that he wants to have. But I know I went way over, you know, three sentences.
Yeah, that was, Tom, that was like 58 sentences.
Three paragraphs. Yeah. So, I mean, technically, if I never stopped, I could have just been adding commas and commas and commas and commas and commas, and it would be one sentence. But
that's fair.
It's like my writing style.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just stream of consciousness.
I also, for right now, I trust Sadar, Jesus. I trust Gordon. I think the Stepan move, like, Gordon has at least moved in the right direction mentally. His execution may not have been there with the Stepan trade, and I do think the Eric Staal trade was facilitated by Glenn Sather. But,
I know we want to wrap up the show. I feel like this is a good way to do it. Which potential trade do you think the Rangers have the greatest opportunity to fuck up?
The easy answer is Zuccarello, but the real answer is McDonough, because you could forgive Zuccarello's return being screwed up. You can't forgive McDonough's, and it's such a, like, are the Rangers going to go after Carlo at, like, a first round pick and anybody from Boston? It's got to be the right return. And I think at this point it's so open that the Rangers are looking to move him that it would be almost a bigger headache to keep him. I 100% think McDonough is the easiest trade to screw up for sure. What do you think, Michael?
I was feeling like it's very easy to screw up the Zuccarello trade, but I see your point. I feel like that is the trade they can least afford to mess up, and so that's the one that will keep me up at night. Is if you do trade your captain, if you do trade Ryan McDonough, you really, really have to get a lot back, and you have to get the right a lot back. And the good news is it seems like almost every playoff contender is trying to get their foot in the door in the cabal that's forming to figure out this bidding war of what's it going to take to get Ryan McDonough. And that's great news for the Rangers. But it does make me nervous that there definitely exists a scenario where they don't get enough back. They get the wrong prospect back. And, you know, if history has taught us anything, you have to be super careful getting prospects back from other teams, because you might covet another team's prospect, but if they're willing to move it, it's not a good sign. You know what I mean? It's very rarely a good sign. You need to be prying it away from them. It can't just be, you know, this is the guy who we think is the best and they're willing to do it, and that's not a good thing. So, I don't know. Tom, do you feel the same way? Do you think the McDonough trade's the one with the kind of the highest risk factor involved?
I think partially my biggest fear is that the Rangers fall into a trap where a team is interested in multiple players. Like, I think a few places have said that there are teams that are interested in both Nash and McDonough, and that the Rangers fall into the trap of trading them as a package instead of individually, because you can pit multiple teams against each other for one player where you may not be able to do the same in a package. So while they still may get a good return, I don't know if
don't trade in
that's
bulk.
As much as one player here, one player there, you both want them. Who's going to be the one to sort of step up and ante up to put it over the top? So that's a situation that I fear, that by putting them together, you're sort of selling it as a lump sum type deal, as instead of, you know, here's a prime asset that I need this, and this.
The Rangers can't afford to be Costco, Tom. Is that what you're saying?
Or BJ's. Neither of them. Patreon.com/blueshirtbanter. You can pay for content like this, and you should, because you're good people. And it's Valentine's Day. Anthony Viola, John J. Porter, John Reppy, Johnny Alo, Alex Gardner, Eric Cohn, Alexander Ricard, and Andre Shikagoff, Daniel DeGene, Matt Bader, George 50 Littman. Guy from Montana, Andrew Grigo, Stink Fleeman, Dan Lynch, Mike Offit, Trevor Kempna, Gabriel Vargas, Dan Carosi, David L. Singer, Arch Williams, Bob Cowa, Scott Potash, Darwin Bushman, James Dangles, Alexander Thornton, Danny Santiago, Grumpy Smokey, Igor Zatlowski, Thomas Sosa, Chris B., and Michael the Man Silvers. They all did it. They donated, so you should donate.
Thank you, everyone, for being patient with us with the upload problems and Joe raising a small child and Beth having work. We're doing our best, everybody.
You guys could probably hear my small child screaming in the background. Let me get to her before I get divorced. Love you all.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Will, don't make her life.